let's get to know the Chicago Bears rookies, part deux. Part two of our two-part podcast, breaking down the Bears rookie class, talking to the experts that know these new Bears best. If you missed part one, I don't know how you could, considering how many times I've tweeted it, but if you did miss it, go to profootballweekly.com/bears, check it out on our podcast page in iTunes, Chicago Football Podcast. We had interviews there covering five of the picks, and we're going to wrap up today, this week, with the other four picks, closing out the Bears draft class of nine, their biggest draft class in, I believe, 8 years. So a lot of guys to talk about today, and at the end of the show, we'll kind of give you our summary. I got associate producer John Solly here, so we'll kind of recap the draft class at the end of the show. Of course, executive producer Dan Mott doing a great job for us all week. Let's jump right into the first interview, though. And we're going to start this one out. You probably thought last week we were going to start Leonard Floyd, but I threw you a curveball with Cody Whitehair. This week we do start with the top pick, number 9 overall Florida outside linebacker Leonard Floyd. To get the lowdown on Leonard Floyd, I talked to Eric Zier. You might remember him as the former Browns quarterback, also played quarterback for Georgia, and he is the color commentator for Georgia Bulldogs football. Here's my interview with Eric Zier. Eric, talking to a lot of people that have gotten to know Leonard Floyd, watched him, they always joke about how skinny he is. He was the skinny kid in high school, skinny kid in college. So the first time you saw him on the field there in Athens, what were you thinking of what the skinny could do for the Georgia Bulldogs?
Well, I'll tell you, from the very first time that he stepped on the field, he was a force and a difference maker for us at the University of Georgia, just extremely talented young man. No question he's on the slender side, but when he is out there, he's tremendous speed, tremendous length, just to how he plays the game of football. He's got a knack of being very disruptive. So don't be fooled by the build, because he can play.
What was maybe the first eye-opening moment or even any eye-opening moment with him, kind of watch him on the field where you kind of go, wow, this kid's something special?
Yeah, you know, it was early on with him, and it's just he has the ability to take over football games and be unbelievably disruptive for opposing offenses. And, it's nearly every time that he steps on the football field, you really think about not this past season, but the year before. He was a dominant force, and he came into this past year, and there was a tremendous amount of attention paid to him. So his numbers suffered a little bit, but he is an explosive player.
Yeah, we've talked about those numbers a little bit, you know, the 4.5 sacks, and he said, and the Bears have said, that, you know, he wasn't rushing every third down. They used him a lot in coverage. What did you see in terms of how the Georgia defense utilized Leonard because of some of his abilities?
Well, you know, we've had some turnover there on the defensive side of the ball at Georgia. It was actually his second year. Last year was the second year in the system. Under Coach Pruitt, and there was a slight change year over year into how it was used. So a couple of years ago, it really primarily as a pass rusher. Going into last year, they would leverage him, put him back into some coverage more through some zone blitz schemes that we implemented as Coach Pruitt defense became a little more complex from that first year, but it just speaks to the kind of athlete that he is. And when he puts his hand on the ground, he's got great burst off the ball, and is a tough guy to block and contain, but skilled enough then to get out of that three-point stance and get himself back into coverage or play an outside linebacker type position and create havoc in that way as well.
Eric, we'll wrap up with this. Obviously, you have plenty of experience at the quarterback position in college and, of course, in the NFL. You've watched Leonard Floyd for a few years. What tells you that at the NFL level, the pro level, he can impact the opposing quarterback the way the Bears are hoping?
Yeah, you know, the one thing that sets guys apart is speed. And Leonard Floyd possesses plenty of that. And I think you can just go back into this playoff season and look at what the Denver Broncos did with their defense. And it was built around being fast, getting to the quarterback, and just getting people out of their rhythm. Leonard Floyd brings that as well as anybody we've had in a while come through the University of Georgia. And speed translates. A lot of other things that won't translate quite as well, but speed is one of those things that does, and when you've got it in the kind of position he's going to play, he can most definitely be an impact player.
All right, well, I know everyone in Chicago is very much looking forward to seeing what the number 9 pick Leonard Floyd can do. Eric Zier covers, obviously, the Georgia Bulldogs color commentator and, of course, the former quarterback. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you so much.
Well, John, I think we've had a full, you know, almost about a week and a half here to digest the Leonard Floyd pick. And, again, by the way, big thank you to Eric Zier. And it was a quick interview, and I think we've had so much Leonard Floyd. You know, I got a chance to talk to his high school coach. You can see that story at profootballweekly.com/Bears, getting good stuff from him. We've heard so much from Ryan Pace and John Fox. We've heard a lot from the draft Knicks, the draft analysts, the Kuipers and McShays and Mayocks of the world on this pick. But John Solly, we haven't heard from you. You can follow him on Twitter at JSolly if you disagree with him. Give him some ats. John, what did you think of the Leonard Floyd pick?
Well, first of all, I've always thought draft Knicks, those guys should be named Nick, right?
They should. Yeah. I am Nick the draft Nick.
Nick Kuiper.
Nick
no.
Mayock.
You know, having some time to digest the Leonard Floyd pick, it's a home run threat is I think what it boils down to. If you're looking to take the team from average, which is probably about where they are right now, to doing damage in the playoffs and talking about winning championships, then your first round pick has to be a hit. And given how the board fell and how things went, Leonard Floyd was a guy that they clearly identified was a guy that could do that very clearly by trading up for him. As Laramie Tunsil fell, I thought, man, what if? Because there's, I think, a 10-year tackle right there for you. And, okay, he smoked a little weed. So what? But, you know, if you're gonna improve the defense, if you're going to rush the quarterback, you need a guy like Leonard Floyd, if that guy can do it. And you know, given John Fox and his abilities and the coaching staff's abilities, I think they can get it out of him. If it's Mark Trestman leading the team, I don't trust them to get Leonard Floyd to where he needs to be. But John Fox, yeah, he's got a track record of doing that.
Friend of the program, Adam Hogue, who is still a friend of the program, even though he, of course, hosts a competitive podcast, he mentioned this, that if Leonard Floyd stayed in school, his defensive coordinator would have been Mel Tucker.
Ew.
So maybe he made the right choice.
You know, he probably saw that and said, you know, I got to get out of here. This is unreal, guys.
I guess I've saved the listeners from giving my own take on Leonard Floyd because our last week's show, we had the 5 interviews. So I just let everyone listen. And you heard what Eric Zier had to say about the speed. You can't teach speed. You can't teach the athleticism. And I didn't necessarily need the extra time to digest because I was building up, preparing. Right before the draft, I said it was going to be Floyd, Rankins, or Shaq Lawson. So I was ready for the Floyd pick. I was not ready for them to trade up to take Floyd. That kind of surprised me. I mean, looking back, knowing the Giants' interest in him, and when you learn how much the Bears wanted him, it makes sense. But as it happened in real time, I see Hargraves on the board. I see Laramie Tunsil still on the board. I see Shaq Lawson on the board. So I wasn't entirely sure it was going to be for Floyd. He could get you double-digit sacks, and nobody else in the Bears has that capability. And there's no speed off the edge. Willie Young's in the last year of his deal. Lamar Houston's a power rusher with a cap number that decreases year after year after year. They needed somebody to complement Pernell McPhee. Now, I understand, you know, we talked about Cody Whitehair last week. You know what you're getting from Cody Whitehair. This guy will probably be a dependable guard in the league for a while. Jonathan Bullard, who we'll get to in a little bit. Solid defensive lineman. You know what you're going to get from him. But when it's Leonard Floyd, there's too many question marks, it seems, for a guy that's going to be the number 9 pick overall, which I know is scaring people. But I think you hit it on the head. Vic Fangio and John Fox's resumes, they've earned some trust. And I think this was a Fox-Fangio certainly influenced pick. Not to take anything away from Ryan Pace, but this was a guy – you know, Ryan Pace said himself that John Fox wanted help on third down. He needed that speed. They had no threat to get after the passer on third down when Pernell McPhee was not 100%. Credit to Willie Young. Stepped up late in the season, but you got to think future.
So putting that all together, it makes sense. But understand the scrutiny when you're talking. You shouldn't have this many questions about a number nine pick.
But you still, I mean, look, you're still facing Aaron Rodgers twice a year. You're still going to need to get to him twice a year. You know, Teddy Bridgewater is certainly improving. Minnesota is definitely improving. You want to force them into throwing situations. And, you know, we've talked a little bit about this, but this is a pick that may define Ryan Pace a little bit. He's going to be judged on this pick.
You know, the Kevin White pick, they didn't trade up for him. I think it was a no-brainer at that position. And, look, we can say what we want, but we don't know what was going on in the Bears' draft room. Obviously, they had a much higher grade on this player than maybe some other people did. But I'll say this, though. Some of these draft nicks that we're talking about felt really good about the Bears' draft. And I talked to one person, a pretty respected player evaluator, who called Floyd by far the most explosive pass rusher in the draft. That's not groundbreaking. But when you look at the pass rushers, but I think it's a reminder of if you wanted an impact player off the edge, he was the one you had to get.
And that was a glaring need. The Bears definitely needed someone, so it's best player available by need.
And look who was on the board there. I mean, I like Shaq Lawson a lot. I thought that would have been a fine pick. He dropped to the Bills.
Which was surprising to me.
Made sense that the Bills took him, but it surprised me that he dropped. Shoulder questions, I assume, are part of that. Vernon Hargrave is not a perfect fit for the Bears' secondary, as we saw with the type of guys they drafted later on. So, you know, there was a drop-off in talent. Now, Laremy Tunsil thing.
It was weird, but man, a 10-year tackle.
Yeah, here's the thing, and I know our Pro Football Weekly colleagues don't agree with me on this. They like Charles Leno. That is not a huge smoke screen. Now, where was Jason Spriggs on their board? Where was Ronnie Stanley if he fell to them? We don't know that. But I do believe there is legitimate belief in that building that Charles Leno, maybe not going to be a Pro Bowler, but is going to be a good left tackle for them for a while. And that's the guy that they want. That's the guy that they're going with. So let's get to it. We got three more interviews talking about the other three Bears picks we have not touched on. Our next one here is my favorite pick, and we'll talk about this after the interview. Third round, the Bears go get their defensive lineman, Jonathan Bullard, out of Florida. And to learn more about Bullard, we talked to Scott Carter, the senior writer at FloridaGators.com, breaking down the Bears' D-lineman. Talking now about the Bears' third-round pick, defensive lineman Jonathan Bullard. Scott Carter, you can follow him on Twitter, at GatorsScott, senior writer for FloridaGators.com. And, Scott, I was reading more about Jonathan Bullard. He was rivals ranked him as a top defensive end in the country coming out of high school, came to Gainesville. Obviously, a lot of pressure there when you're a top recruit playing for the Gators, but he was first-team all-freshman right away. Was he able to kind of handle that pressure early on there in Florida?
You know, Bullard came in, you know, he was in the same class as Dante Fowler Jr., and, you know, getting two defensive linemen like that in the same class, man, that was a big big recruiting day for the Gators. And then, you know, Dante kind of developed, I think, a little quicker on the field, put up more impressive stats. But John showed right away that, you know, he was going to be successful at this level. And, you know, you watched him kind of just develop each year and kept getting better. You know, one thing that he faced, as you guys are aware, even in the NFL draft, a lot of talk was where he's going to play. He also, you know, had that issue here at Florida some, and they did switch him back and forth from end to tackle. But he continued to get better, and yeah, he's a very, you know, grounded guy. He never had really problem adjusting to, you know, the expectations of playing in a program like Florida where you are in the spotlight a lot. He's just kind of a laid-back guy. Deals with all that stuff very casually and just goes about his business. And, you know, he develops into a really good player for it.
Yeah, and obviously he progressed well from freshman year. And then obviously as a senior, he was first team All-SEC. And what did you see out of him when Fowler was gone? Because I'm sure, you know, I was reading, I think your article actually talked about how, you know, scouts told him to stay for his senior year and he to prove, you know, maybe prove that he could do it without Fowler on that line. So what were some of the things you saw from him as a senior that really, you know, to take charge?
Well, right away, he instantly kind of stepped up and become a leader. He's always one of those guys, I think, in a way, he played a little bit in Fowler's shadow his first 3 years. And then this year, you almost saw a different kind of guy. Still, you know, laid back, humble. But he around his teammates at practice, I mean, he was one of the guys that they looked to for direction. And he just took that role on and really handled it well. And then just from a perspective of what he did on the field, I mean, he worked a lot in the offseason, came in really good shape, and you could tell it was important to him. I think his words were, you know, after going through that draft process the previous year and getting told basically, hey, you need to go back to school before you come out. I mean, he kind of took that personal because, you know, he said basically that's people telling him what he wants to do for the rest of his life, that he's not good enough, or at least his career. And so he took that personal and came back, and you just saw a motivated guy right from the beginning. And immediately he started putting up his best numbers that we'd ever seen. And he just looked stronger, looked in great shape, and it just kind of blossomed. I mean, that's the best way to put it. You just saw a guy that you knew had a lot of potential, and you really didn't think he'd seen his best. And we started to see that his senior year. And I still think, you know, there's some upside there to happen in NFL for him.
The Bears GM Ryan Pace, you know, could not stop gushing about Bullard's get off right off the snap, the way he's able to quickly, you know, make his move on the offensive lineman. So I think we all kind of know about that as maybe his best trait. But what else in terms of Bullard, the football player, some of his traits do you recognize from his time in Gainesville?
Well, he's very intelligent, has a high football IQ, as the coaches like to say. He recognizes plays pretty quickly. He's a guy that he just found a way to be in the right spot at the right time a lot of times. And, you know, that's instinct. You can't really teach that stuff. Either a guy has it or not. You know, you may see a player who has more physical ability that just doesn't have everything he needs mentally. John had, I think he was ahead of the curve mentally as far as his football development before physically. They just all came together last year. He's got really good speed, but it's kind of decisive speed on the edge, but he's not going to blow a lot of people away maybe just by looking at him live. But I think once you watch film, he's a guy who has kind of a speed that surprises you sometimes. And he's a big guy also. It helps him in the middle. In the NFL, I don't know if he's as big as what traditionally is used as, you know, a tackle or a run stopper in the middle. I think maybe he's going to have to add a little bit more weight, but it sounds like from what I've heard from the Bears and read, it sounds like they're going to use him more on the end anyway, so I think that suits his game probably best.
Yeah, you know, I think my guess is he'll come in as the kind of the five technique out there on the defensive end, and I'm curious to see if they move him around a little bit inside when the Bears are in their nickel package. And kind of speaking on that, you alluded to how he was moved around a little bit in that defense, and that kind of for him shows that versatility. How did Florida use him? And then I assume, or you can tell me, if it was different this past year with the coaching change and, in fact, maybe helped him out, how they were using him on the defensive line.
Yeah, they used him more on the outside this year. They played a lot of Florida plays a lot of nickel and dime packages. About 75% of their alignments usually are with five defensive backs. They'll go with two linebackers. And John would usually be a guy on the outside up front. Under the previous coach, Phil Muschamp, you saw him really start out inside. And then his sophomore season, they gave him a try on the outside, and he showed some promise there. And then I think he went back to more of the outside really this year and put up some numbers. But he really did. I mean, he really did go back and forth with the Gators. That was something that, you know, he would get asked almost weekly in press conferences, which do you prefer, inside or outside? And you know, he always said either, wherever he can be most productive. But I think in the end, he really felt that he'd maybe found a spot on the outside and perhaps a 3-4 front, which we talked about earlier. It seems like that's going to be how it's going to play out with him in Chicago. And I think early in his career, that's where he's best suited.
Is there a game, a play, something that's always resonated with you when you think back to his career with the Gators?
Boy, one play, you know, that's a good question. I just remember, I know he had a big game against Tennessee this past year, had a key sack there. You know, that game was Tennessee was kind of controlling it. Florida got hot late, and on one of the late possessions where Tennessee, if they had kind of gotten a drive together, they could have iced the game. John made a couple of big stops, including the sack. But really the thing that just sticks out about John to me is very consistent. You saw the improvement each year. He's a guy that I really believe Bears fans will like once they get to kind of get familiar with him and see him, you know, in public settings. He's a very low-key guy, very approachable. Just comes from, you know, Shelby, North Carolina. His mom raised him. He's just a good guy all around, the kind of guy that, you know, college football programs love to have, you know, in the system.
Well, we're looking forward to getting to know him and, of course, seeing him on the field shortly. Scott Carter, senior writer for FloridaGators.com. Follow him on Twitter, @Gators. Scott, thank you for helping break down Bears' new defensive lineman, third-rounder Jonathan Bullard.
No problem, guys. Thanks for having me.
Again, big thanks to Scott Carter for that interview. Go ahead and follow him on Twitter for Florida Gators updates. And he wrote some stuff on the Florida site about Jonathan Bullard. And, John, Pro Football Focus loved this pick.
Yeah, they had him as what, the
second best?
Best
to Cody Whitehair, which was, they thought was the best pick. I like Bullard. I haven't watched a ton of tape on him, but to get him in the third round and for what they need from that position, look, there's only one J.J. Watt. Okay, these guys are on the field 60-70% of the time. You don't need them to get 10 sacks a year. You need them to stop the run, and you need somebody that has that quick first step that can make an impact. And I thought where they got him, because I'm looking at a second round, when are they going to take a defensive lineman? And to get him in the third, I thought might have been Pace's best pick.
Yeah, the fact that he was still around in the third really, really surprised me, because I think Bullard is just solid. You're not going to – I don't think he's spectacular, but – you know, you're looking in the third round for just solid value, and I think that's exactly what Bullard brings to the table. And again, a defense that needs help. You already got Floyd in the first round. Now you get somebody up on the line who I think is really just going to be a solid pick.
And looking at this draft, how deep the D-line was, we knew they were going to take somebody at some point. The first round, when you go up to 9, you're not going to take somebody 9 because Bosa's gone. Buckner's gone.
And you're not moving up to get Lawson.
Right. And then you go to the second round. And A'shaun Robinson and Jaren Reed dropped for reasons. And I don't think, especially Reed, is not the type of player the Bears were looking for. They wanted somebody that had a little bit more penetrating experience. And that's what Bullard offered them. I thought Chris Jones would have been nice, but he was not available when they picked. Chris Jones went to the Kansas City Chiefs. So this is the guy they got. And again, getting him in the third round, I think, is nice value. When we talked about Leonard Floyd and his impact on Lamar Houston, Willie Young, we could see their snaps decrease. This is going to create some competition, make the roster maybe for a Will Sutton and Ego Ferguson, Bruce Gaston, some of the other guys in that defensive line. Mitch Unrein's there, a great number four defensive lineman who can be the number three. He signed the contract, but this is going to really put some pressure on a couple of Phil Emery's other picks. All right, moving on. Sixth round. The Bears draft a guy that a lot of people hadn't heard of before, from William and Mary. And this was a defensive back with 9 blocked kicks in his career, DeAndre Houston Carson. And who better talk about DeAndre Houston Carson than his head coach at William & Mary, Jimmy Laycock, who joined us to break down the Bears DB. Well, Coach, I think Bears fans had to kind of rifle through the internet to find out a little information about DeAndre when the Bears made the pick. But, boy, were they impressed by what they read, what they saw, some of the video. I wanted you to take me back a little bit to the player you first recruited to come there. What did you kind of see from him early on that made you think he could be a good player for your program?
Well, he came from a good family, number one. He was a good student, number two. And, you know, we looked at him in high school. In fact, I went to see him play basketball because, again, we were recruiting him as an athlete who we felt like was good enough to play corner. And that's one of the most difficult positions we have to get here at William Mary, guys that can line up and play corner with the speed and the size and all that. So that's where we were projecting him in recruiting. We felt like he was a really good athlete to do that. So anyway, he came in here, and one thing led to another, and he developed into a very good defensive back, a very good corner. In fact, his junior year, he was all-league at the corner and had a fine year. And then the coaches came to me and talked to me about possibly moving him to the safety position, and I was initially not in favor of that because I said, why? You know, we've worked like crazy to get a good corner, so why are we going to mess him up and put him at safety? But they talked me into it, and then went through spring, and he looked good, went through preseason, got through the first game, and I said, it's a no-brainer. He is an outstanding safety, and I think he just got better and better as the year went on. He was just a playmaker. He, so far as make the interceptions and made the tackles. I don't know how many tackles he made that saved long runs for us. And then plus, He was just tremendous on special teams. He has a great knack for blocking kicks, for timing his layout on PATs or punts and all that. So he had a tremendous year for us this year, and he's a fine young man, a smart young man, and we'll really miss him. But he had a tremendous career here for us.
Yeah, 9 blocked kicks in his career, which is amazing. Did it get to a point where it almost got boring? You almost expected it to happen?
No, it didn't get boring. No, there was nothing boring all about that. But you know, here's a guy that's all-conference player and all that, and he relished that opportunity. Every week he'd want to look at tape and talk with the coaches about what we could do this week, what our chances were to block him this week. And, he got into it.
And you mentioned that transition to safety. How did he embrace that transition? How did he handle the learning of the techniques and everything to make that move successfully?
He, with a great attitude, he jumped at it right away. He said, okay, if that's what y'all want to do, I'll go at it and learn as well as I can and put all my energies into it. And that's what he did. I was a little surprised that he was as willing to make that move as he was. You know, we'd had a player there before who graduated and went on to play pro football. So I think you could see that it was an integral spot in our defense. So, he embraced it. In fact, he embraced it more than I did, that's for sure, at first. But, they sold me on that one. After we played that first ball game and I saw how many tackles he was involved in, you guys made the right call on this one.
Yeah, and B.W. Webb, of course, is the defensive back who played for you. William Mary has made it to the NFL, and you guys have had some pretty good defensive backs there, and you mentioned that it's an important spot to play corner and then to play safety. His skill set, DeAndre's, whether it's covering or tackling, what parts of those abilities do you think are going to be really perfect for him as he gets the transition to the NFL game?
Well, I think what will help him a lot is because he will have the ability to play like corner technique, whether it's man technique on a slot or interior type of stuff, and also can play zone very well insofar as from the safety position. I think he just gives you tremendous flexibility insofar as use of him in a secondary that he can do a lot of different things, and he's not just locked into one particular area. And again, you go back with the idea that he's only had 1 year at the safety position. So, again, I think there's more room for him to grow and learn there and continue to improve there without sacrificing his corner skills.
A couple more here with William & Mary head coach Jimmy Laycock, who coached, of course, DeAndre, Houston Carson, new Bears safety, defensive back, cornerback, wherever they decide to put him on special teams. And special teams, of course, where they're really excited to use him. Besides the block kicks, which are what everyone's talking about, what else about his his traits leads you to believe that he'll be really an immediate contributor there in the coverage teams and whatever they need for him on special teams?
Well, I think it's because he realizes the importance of special teams. He understands it because we put a good bit of emphasis on it, and he's been on punt teams, he's been on kickoff teams, he's done all that here for us too now. And so he understands that. I think he'll relish that opportunity, and certainly, that's one thing I talked to him about. I said, when you go to the NFL, you're going to get on the field because you're going to be on special teams. They're going to want you. I know they'll want you on special teams. So that'll get you on the field, and sometimes that's where you've got to really make your mark and get some of the position coaches to look at you maybe even a little more closely because of what you do on special teams. But he'll be involved there.
Yeah, and I think Bears coaches were probably happy to hear him tell the media when we asked him about his strengths. He was the one that pointed out special teams, how much he loves playing special teams and watching that tape. And I think a lot of NFL teams like to hear that. Okay, I'm going to put you on the spot here a little bit, Coach, to wrap things up. He had 9 block kicks. He had a bunch of touchdowns, a lot of highlights. Is there one that you can pick out that really stands out for you as a favorite memory of his time there at William & Mary?
Oh, jeez. No, there really isn't. I mean, the interception he ran back all the way against Villanova this year was pretty big. His blocked punt for a safety against Virginia was really big. I mean, there are so many things that DeAndre has done. But he's even more so than that. The way he has matured as a person, has grown as a person, I take a lot of pride in, and I'm very excited for him to be able to take this next step.
Well, we're looking forward to getting to know him here, both on and off the field. And it's always a good thing, Coach, when you can't think of one highlight to pick out for you because he's got so many. I'm sure you guys are going to enjoy catching some Bears games when you can out there at William & Mary. Thank you again for the time and giving us some insight into the new Bears defensive back.
My pleasure. Take care.
Thanks again to William & Mary and head coach Jimmy Laycock. They have kind of nice history with defensive backs getting drafted there, B.W. Webb, and now DeAndre Houston Carson, who's going to step in right away on special teams and help out in the secondary. I heard from a scout who was in that area who was very high on what he can do, and I think this is one of those picks helping the special teams. Bears have put an emphasis this offseason on special teams. They bring back Brzezinski. They get Omar Bolden. They bring back Sherrick McManus, Mariani, Deontay Thompson. And now they bring in Houston Carson. I think the other guys we talked about last week, Deion Bush, DeAndre Hall, I think they'll factor in as well. But this is where this guy is going to be able to get going right away to help the Bears out as a sixth-round pick.
And when I'm looking at sixth-round picks, I think you absolutely have to evaluate how they're going to contribute on special teams and look at their production in college and look how much experience they have there. And Carson, like you said, 9 block kicks, that's production right there. That's exactly what you're looking for in that round.
Let's segue here, John, to thanking our sponsor, Loot Crate. LootCrate.com. You want to get $3 off your next box, go to lootcrate.com/Shaw, S-H-A-W, enter our promo code, which is Shaw, and you get $3 off a box that has $45 of value in every box. These are for our geeks, our nerds, our comic book lovers, and pop culture aficionados alike out there. John, are you excited for Civil War coming out this summer, Marvel Comics?
Incredibly excited,
I'm
Kevin.
Pumped for this. I actually got the comic book. I have the comic book.
Good for you.
Yep. I got it actually. It's in the family. I got it as a gift for my sister, who's a big fan. So I'm looking forward to reading it, then maybe seeing the movie. And they are one of the themes this for this month's box. There are also Avengers involved, Warcraft, Dragon Ball Z. But it's a big summer for those of you who like Marvel and are excited about Civil War. And if you get a box from Loot Crate this month, you're going to get a couple of items, some memorabilia items, and a t-shirt as well referencing some of these things. So again, lootcrate.com/Shaw, S-H-A-W. That is our promo code. You get $3 off your first crate. So we now move on, John, to many people's favorite pick of the Bears draft.
My guy.
Your guy, Daniel Braverman, wide receiver out of Western Michigan. There's going to be some competition to see which writer gets Braverman to come over for Rosh Hashanah for the Jewish holiday. My bubby is already excited. That he's that the Bears drafted a member of the tribe. You know, we all make fun of me, and I make fun of myself for my Northwestern pride. But there's so few Northwestern players that make it. Somewhat similar in the Judaism religion. There's so few. You know, everyone knows the joke from Airplane. You know, you want a leaflet about the famous Jewish athlete. So how about Daniel Braverman? And I got to tell you, we're not built to be as fast as he is. So very impressive. And, you know, look, that was – kidding aside, but I'm not kidding because, you know, I'll happily break bread with Daniel Braverman. And by the way, go Google Daniel Braverman Sports Illustrated, a really good SI.com feature on him. That's where the Bears need help. At that wide receiver spot was in the slot and a return man. And John Solly, my gift to you was we got to interview your guy, your man.
There's my guy.
P.J. Fleck. They're both your guys. P.J. Fleck, head coach of Western Michigan. Of course, we all remember him around the area, Caneland High School. He was a star receiver in Northern Illinois, and then he coached for a little bit at Northern, where he had to deal with reporter John Solly asking him questions.
Every day.
And he survived, and he's now the head coach of Western Michigan. He coached Daniel Braverman and head coach P.J. Fleck. He joined us to break down the Bears wide receiver. So who better to talk about new Bears wide receiver Daniel Braverman with than one of the best wide receivers himself in Northern Illinois history and, of course, the head coach of the Western Michigan Broncos, P.J. Fleck. Coach, before when I talk to coaches about Bears draft picks, I always want to know about the first impressions. So when you got to Western Michigan, obviously Daniel played in 2012. Before he tore his ACL, what did you already know about him, the player?
He was incredibly explosive. One thing about him, he's twitched everywhere. You know, he'd make cuts. He'd make moves that you're sitting there thinking, you know, if I made those moves, my hips would replace. But I think he really had to learn how to control that too. You know, I think there was a little bit of, when he was really young, maybe a little bit of spastic movement instead of actually efficient movement. So the course of his career, I thought he did a tremendous job of making himself a very efficient player, taking all of that athleticism and quickness and explosiveness and matching it with the best type of football player he could be and use it ineffectively. And I think that's where he's really grown tremendously, and I think that's where you're starting to see the finished product of his college career.
And he talked to us about the comeback from the ACL, and obviously he had a very productive 2014 season. But what did you see from him in terms of that rehabilitation? It's such a difficult thing for anybody, especially someone who's in college, to have to go through that and return. What was that process like? What did you kind of maybe learn about him from that?
Well, first of all, I think Daniel comes from our program that it really teaches culture first. Culture is everything, you know, so he's going to be, first of all, a team guy. But when your best players are your hardest workers, you have an elite culture. And Daniel was part of building that, our whole program turnaround at Western Michigan. And he was part of that, you know, and he's one of the hardest workers we have on our football team. He's a gym rat. You couldn't get him out of our facility. I enjoyed coaching him. It was a lot of fun because I saw a lot of myself in him and probably vice versa. He was a lot faster, a lot more explosive, and incredible, probably a way better football player than I ever was. But I think that he saw that type of relationship. So, I mean, he was fun to coach because he was always around. You know, you could always teach something to Daniel, and he was always willing to listen, and he wanted to change. And that was really cool. He wanted to continue to change every single day, and that's what makes him special. And that's why the 5'9 receiver out of Western Michigan can get drafted, is because he is different. He's got a huge crack on his shoulder. You know, he doesn't have a chip, and I think Chicago's going to love him.
And then going to that 2015 season where the numbers just jump out at you, and we've talked about some of these games that he had against big-time competition. On the practice field and some of those skill sets that he had to hone, what did you notice from him, the wide receiver, that allowed him to be so efficient and so productive that last season?
I think it was the anticipation factor. You know, I mean, if you know where people are going to be and you know how to read coverage, he ran a lot of option routes for us. So there's four or five options as he continues to run in an 8-yard span. And he can do a lot of things in a matter of 8 yards. So he had to be able to truly dissect the game, be a student of the game. And I think that's what he did his junior year better than he ever has. He truly dedicated himself to the film room, understanding the game, understanding defenses, looking for keys, and really having a pre-snap read and a post-snap read, and really understanding why we were actually doing what we were doing. Instead of just, I'm going to memorize this, he truly got to a point where he knew why we were doing it. And when a receiver has that feel for anticipation and knowing what's going to happen before it actually happens, that's where they can be at their best. And then you match in with his athleticism, his explosiveness, the type of player he is, plus his knowledge. That's why he was unstoppable. And it didn't matter who we played, no one could cover him. And that's a credit to him.
PJ, it's John Solly. When I think about MAC wide receivers in the NFL, obviously, you know, a guy like Antonio Brown sticks out. Is there a comp for Daniel in terms of guys that have been in the MAC and found success in the NFL that you can maybe enlighten us with?
You know, one thing I've been taught as a youngster is comparisons will take away your joy. You know what I mean? Comparisons are always very hard. I think the media really wants comparisons, and I've heard them all, from Wes Welker to Julian Edelman to Antonio Brown. You know, Daniel Braverman is Daniel Braverman. But when you look at him and you look at his style of play, that's the three I would kind of mix together. Now, I'm not saying he's just as good as all their positives and mix them all together. He's going to be an all-pro next year. But I think when you start to look at his game, he can work very well in a short area of space. You know, he has the elusiveness and the quickness, but he also has the speed to create separation vertically. He can play on the outside. He can play on the inside. He can work reverses. He's almost a glorified running back. He can run the option routes. He can run the normal route tree. He's been taught really for 4 years, really by an NFL wide receiver coach. Been in a kind of an NFL wide receiver passing game. So when you kind of look at who he's going to actually be like, I've never really met a player that's identical to someone else. Even when I coached in the NFL, they were similar But I would go along the lines of a Wes Welker mixed with Julian Edelman, because Julian Edelman is 200 pounds. You know, Daniel's 180. There's a big difference in that. But Wes, you know, Wes was around that too. So Daniel's going to have to use his elusiveness and his quickness so people can't get their hands on him, because he's not as big as everybody else. But that's what he does best.
When you think back to the Ohio State game, because I think when you talk about a player from the MAC making that transition to the NFL, you're going to look at games against top competition, and you can't get, you know, more top competition than the Buckeyes, of course. And Daniel had a very productive game there. When you think back to that week leading up to it and then what he did on that Saturday, what stands out to you about that performance?
I think he was just unfazed by it. One thing about Daniel Braverman is you'll all find out he's an extremely confident young man. Not cocky, just confident. And he earns that confidence through his preparation, being a student of the game, the work ethic that he has. And so going into Ohio State, he treated it like any other game. You know, Daniel just wanted to change his best, be better than he was the day before, just like all of our team. Now, we didn't win the game, but Daniel showed how productive he was because he was unfazed by it. And I think that's the mark of a really talented player. When you're in venues like that, because you're going to be in high, high pressure situations in the NFL all the time, from practice for your 5 to 6 week training camp type, to games, to Super Bowls, to playoff games, to last-minute contests that come down to the final second. And he handled the pressure very well. And I think that was the biggest thing that stood out to me, was he didn't care who was covering him. He couldn't wait to show that he was better than everybody.
PJ, that sounds like a certain former Northern Illinois wide receiver to me.
Yeah, but he's just way better of a player. It turns out a lot better. I might have thought I was a little bit better, but I might not have had the results that he had.
And I don't know if you think about this very much, but obviously you're the pride of Caneland High School, the Northern Illinois connection. Is there a little extra excitement for you that he's going to the Bears?
We were in Chicago when he got drafted, and I couldn't be more excited. I love the city of Chicago. My family still lives there. I'm so excited being in Kalamazoo, Michigan, because I'm so close to the city. It's my favorite city in the entire world, and I'm just so thankful that we have a Bear from Western Michigan and someone that I've coached there, and hopefully get to watch him for a long time. And I'm very, very excited. Yes, there's a little bit of special, a few smiles in the Fleck house because he is a Chicago Bear, that's for sure.
Well, I know the Bears are excited about him, and certainly Bears fans are very excited about it. That was a draft pick that people did not necessarily see coming, and they read about Daniel. They knew about you, of course, and they liked the pick. I'll wrap up with this, Coach Fleck. Now, in the NFL, you can get away a little bit more with some celebrations. So if Daniel scores an NFL touchdown, you expect to see him row the boat a little bit?
I expect him to either row the boat or kind of wave with both hands. He's got this weird little wave with both hands by the side of his hips that he does. So you'll see something, I promise you that. But I think Bears fans got to get him be in his ear about rowing the boat. So let's make sure he does that when he scores.
Certainly will. All right. P.J. Fleck, head coach of Western Michigan. Of course, you all remember him from Northern Illinois. You can follow him on Twitter at @coach_Fleck. He coached Daniel Braverman in college. And thanks again so much, Coach, for the insight on the new Bears wide receiver.
You got it, guys. Keep rowing the boat. Thanks a lot.
Thanks again to Western Michigan and P.J. Fleck for talking to us. Row the boat, John. Row the boat.
I tell you, I'm feeling elite after that conversation.
Feeling elite. That is P.J. Fleck. That is a great interview. Great stuff about Daniel Braverman. And I tell you, you talk about the speed. You talk about the way this guy gets in and out of his breaks. And, look, we joke about all the white wide receiver qualities that he has, but there are some good ones.
and the joke, I mean, let's face it, when you saw the initial scouting reports on this guy, he's a coach's coach.
Crafty. Yeah,
yes,
we all
exactly.
Know what it is.
White.
You know, what was missing was that whether or not he's a mensch. You know, that would have been the Jewish wide receiver scouting report. Again, I can make these jokes. It's all right. He's going to come over for the high holidays. This is going to be an intriguing guy. And I can tell you, Bears fans, this is the type of guy third or fourth quarter against the Chiefs in the preseason is going to have a Dane Sonsenbacher, speaking of white wide receivers, slot wide receivers, and he's going to catch a pass over the middle and go the distance, and everyone's going to go nuts about this guy. But hey, you can't deny what he did in college against some really, really good competition, as Coach Fleck just talked to us about.
Yeah, I feel bad. He's going to be the great white hype or the great white hope for a certain segment of Bears fans. But for a seventh-round pick, look, you're looking for, I think, one or two elite attributes, use that word elite again, and it's his speed. oh my goodness, is it his speed? And I think that because he has that, and because you know he's coached by a guy who has been in the NFL, has NFL experience, I think he's got a shot to make the roster given his attributes and his makeup.
Yeah, I mean, and we talk about how each of these draft picks impacts a player, and well, let's talk about him. Mark Mariani, friend of the program, of course, great friend of the program, BFF of the program, but we were talking about slot receiver and return man, Deontay Thompson. These are the guys that are, they've now had some extra competition. It's a seventh-round pick, but seventh-round pick, which, as Coach Fleck, it's not just a chip on his shoulder. It's a whole crack in his shoulder. Let's go through a couple other things about the roster, John, before we wrap close up shop here. They cut Antrell Roll. And they did that after adding three defensive backs.
The writing's kind of on the wall when you're watching that. If you're
and the writing on the wall was already there for Matt Slauson after they added a couple guards. And look, I like talking to Matt Slauson as much as any reporter in that building. And I know fans love them. He's a Chicago type of guy that Bears fans would like. He was so important to the team last year. But they realized that they did not want – you know, they wanted somebody else to their offense. And so that was – it's unfortunate – but, you know, this hits the business. And then so he obviously impacted greatly. Jordan Howard, I think a good pick if you're Jeremy Langford because it was not Ezekiel Elliott. So Langford's going to come in as a starter again. If you're Kadeem Carey, though, here's a bigger north-south runner who's going to challenge you to be that number two guy, run out the clock kind of running back.
Was this not only draft, but free agency period, was that an endorsement of Jeremy Langford, or is that, you know, they couldn't get C.J. Anderson and Ezekiel Elliott wasn't going to fall to them, and they weren't going to take Derrick Henry in the second round?
So I'm going to talk out of both sides of my mouth here as a football analyst. They are comfortable with Jeremy Langford being their number one. They would have had no problem if they found somebody that they could get to be the number one. So I think that they had a chance to get C.J. Anderson, someone they're familiar with, who they think is good enough to be a top back. They couldn't get him, and now they're like, okay, that's fine. You know, if Elliott was there, I think that would have been an interesting situation for them. And he's not, but they're fine with Langford. I don't think this was a – it was more so – talked about the other players than it did. I don't think it was an indictment against what Langford can
do. So they're the guy that's dating a girl, but when they go to the bar, they're still kind of playing the field a little bit. Like, oh, yeah, let's go talk to you over
my
here.
My junior
yeah.
high shop teacher said, just because you're on a diet doesn't mean you can't look at the menu. Bears have a great diet with Jeremy Langford, but you got to see what else is out there.
Ryan Pace is on running back Tinder is what you're saying.
Exactly. Swiping left. Oh,
no,
this guy
no one is
to
swiping
Jeremy
back.
Langford. So we've broken down one more position, the cornerback spot, I think is going to be one of the more intriguing positions in camp to figure out who's going to join Fuller and Porter, who's going to be that nickel corner. Because Pace and Fox keep talking so much about finding how often they're in the nickel. So they need to have that third corner. Is it going to be Bryce Callahan, who showed flashes last year? DeAndre Hall, their fourth-round pick out of Northern Iowa. Maybe they convert, Houston Carson. Maybe somebody else steps up. But they have some question marks there. So we will learn maybe a little bit more this weekend. Bears rookie mini camp at Hallis Hall. Next week on the podcast, we'll talk about how rookie mini camp went. A little bit later into May, we get into OTAs and the mini camp. Before we finish, John, you give the Bears your letter draft grade.
Incomplete.
That's the same as mine. What do you know? And I know executive producer Dan Mott has the same grade as well. Thank you all for listening to part two of our Getting to Know the Bears Rookies podcast. I hope you've enjoyed listening as much as we enjoy putting this together for you. Be sure to check out part one if you haven't yet in the iTunes Store Chicago Football Podcast. While you're there, why don't you give us a 5-star rating? We'd really appreciate it. All right, let's run down the thank yous. Eric Zier from Georgia, Scott Carter from the Florida Gators, Jimmy Laycock, William & Mary head coach, and of course, PJ Fleck, the head coach at Western Michigan. Associate producer John Solley, follow him at J Solley. Executive producer Dan Mott at Mott's Thoughts. I am at K Fishbane. You can just call me Kevin, though. Be sure to follow all of our Bear stuff at Bears_Insider. Our content at profootballweekly.com/Bears. Check out the PFW podcast, the Fantasy podcast, the Shaw Media Unprintable podcast. Go to lootcrate.com. Use our promo code Shaw. I don't think I have anything else on my list of what to tell you, but stay tuned for next week. We'll have some more Bears updates right here on the Chicago Football Podcast.
Hi, everyone. This is Hub Arkush, executive editor of Pro Football Weekly, and I'm here to let you know that Pro Football Weekly is back. To celebrate, we're giving away a collector's edition hoodie a day for the next 60 days. Just go to profootballweekly.com/hoodie, enter your email, and if you've won, we'll email you right back. While you're there, check out the site. You want an insider's guide to the NFL? Go to profootballweekly.com for all the news and analysis you won't find anywhere else. Pro Football Weekly, the best coverage in the NFL since 1967.
The Shaw Media Podcast Network has a lot of really great sports podcasts, but are you more than just a sports fan?
You need to be listening to The Unprintable Podcast, which is a pop culture podcast with voices from journalists like myself, Nicole Franz.
And me, Jason Frummer.
As we discuss TV, movies, and of course, Jason's favorite subject,
music.
We'll also have some arts coverage, and you can catch special guests and exclusive interviews.
It's all right here on Unprintable. You can find us in the Shaw Media Podcast Network, available on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, and Stitcher. Remember,
it's unprintable.